There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to UK Tech Weekly, where nerds have gathered to discuss America's huge, sprawling, incoherent mess, and no, not the one in the White House, but consumer electronics show that senior staff writer Dom Preston is just back from.
Hi.
And this week, you're more likely to find him on PUBG than in a pub, which bodes well for our games coverage. It's Lewis Painter, games editor.
Hello.
And we've got a lot to get through, with a trade show, expensive cardboard for adults, and an early first look at one of the year's most anticipated games. Let's record. So, as if Thanksgiving and Christmas weren't enough, the tech world deems it fit to descend upon America straight after to look at lots of big tellies, creepy robots, and a shitload of tech that won't ever get sold. But, among all the noise, Dom Preston, you were able to dig out some stuff we might actually be able to buy.
The CES is its usual sort of weird mess of loads and loads and loads. The big focus is always on the stuff you're never going to want to own. Last year, one of the headline-grabbing things was a smart hairbrush.
Oh, yeah. I went to look at that. It was as bad as it sounds.
Yep. This year, there was a smart litter tray for cats.
How is it smart?
I don't actually know. I purposefully avoided seeing the smart litter tray
curious,
because I don't want to know anything about that.
No.
That's
a pretty basic concept.
It's not something we need to smarten up a lot.
And all shit's in here.
but I think there are a few more interesting things. Very phone-light this year, which CES always is a bit,
yep.
But particularly this year, there was the Galaxy A8, which is sort of like a slightly cheaper, slightly smaller Galaxy S8.
Yeah, so I found that quite interesting because the specs and the design of that are actually a little bit more premium than you might expect.
Mm. It's not a bad looking phone. It does look a lot like an S8, but a bit smaller, which actually appeals to me because I find the S8, the regular S8 is a bit big, I think.
Yeah, the front of it looks a little bit like a Pixel 2 XL, but shrunk down with the bezels, but you still get that curved display. OLED as well, I think. There's not much compromise there.
Still. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's a bit pricey for the sort of mid-range market. It's £500, I think.
Okay.
So it's faced stiff competition at that price point. That puts it right in the crosshairs of Honor and OnePlus.
And you can also get an S8 for about £500 on Amazon anyway.
Exactly, yeah. If you don't buy straight from Samsung, they're not a lot more. But then probably that means the A8 will drop pretty quickly on Amazon and through some of the carriers. Otherwise, phones, Sony released another two mid-rangers, the Xperia XA2 and XA2 Ultra?
This is true. It's a big deal for America because Sony's had this weird legal thing where they never quite have explained it, but these are basically the first two Sony phones for years, well, probably ever, that have fingerprint sensors in the US.
They've had to make US versions without the sensors.
Apparently they have them in, but then firmware blocks them from being used.
Yes,
that's it. Right, okay.
Very
so
interesting.
That might be exciting if you like big bezel mid-range Sony phones. But they've put the fingerprint sensor on the back now rather than on the side.
Right, yeah.
But apart from that, one thing I did want to ask both of you about, Lewis, I know you went there, but you've just reviewed the Razer phone.
Yes.
That's Project Linda, which is strangely named.
Yeah.
Proof and concept at the moment, but they are actually apparently debating making it. What is it, and is it exciting?
I think it was... It's exciting if you are in this specific niche of people that own or intend to own the Razer phone.
And it's a laptop.
It's a laptop. So it's looks a lot like a laptop, except it's basically got no real innards. You slot your Razer phone into the point where you would normally have a trackpad on the laptop. So the phone's touchscreen becomes a trackpad. And then you've got a functioning laptop with a nice display, full keyboard, all that stuff. It's a bit like a Samsung Dex, which lets you use your Samsung phone as a computer.
So it's running like a desktop version of Android.
But yeah, exactly. But basically the difference is just it's all in a laptop form factor. There's a screen included, there's a full keyboard included, all that stuff. And it looks as slick as you'd expect anything from Razer to look.
But obviously like, no price point because they weren't intending to sell it, but then got all this good coverage, right?
Yeah, I think this is probably, it was them testing the waters a bit to see what people thought. Yeah. Their stand at CES was drowning in awards. So I think it's clear the press at least really like it, whether that will translate to consumer interest.
Exactly.
Because I think the problem is it's a niche within a niche.
Yeah.
The Razer phone is a niche phone. It's an Android phone for gamers. And then you've got to have the niche within that who also want laptop powered by their phone, don't already own a laptop, and we have no idea what kind of price they're going to try and charge for it. Like, how many people realistically are there that?
Because the thing that sprang to mind for me was something else Lewis has also seen and used is the Acer Predator 21X.
Yes. Yeah,
which was $9,000, which probably the Linda would not be.
No,
we hope not.
But they actually did put that on sale just because they could.
Yeah.
But Lewis, what do you think of the Razer phone? Just to segue for a moment, like, is it worthy of all the accolades it's been getting?
At its RRP, I think it's a little bit pricey.
How much is it?
It's $695.
Okay.
The RRP, but you can pick it up for $595 at three. So it's £100 off straight away, which I think kind of makes the difference because it doesn't have the, you know, it doesn't have the 18:9 display. It doesn't have that sleek premium look that other, you know, the iPhone 10 has, the S8 has.
I heard you getting pretty excited by 120 hertz refresh rate, though.
That display just makes the whole, like, for a gamer, you know, for years you've only had 60 hertz refresh rate, and then you go up to 120 on a phone, you don't realize what you had before and what you have now, you know. Right. It really does make a difference from everything from just, you know, swiping around menus on the phone to playing the latest games. It's just more responsive, and it just, yeah, it's really enjoyable.
So you think even like scrolling down the timeline, people are going to notice that ghosting's disappearing?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
100%, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Noticed it throughout the phone. It's really cool.
Oh, excellent.
And you've also got the Game Booster app, which I absolutely adored.
What's that briefly?
It allows you to customize what hardware is used when you're playing games. So if you want it to be running at full resolution, you can run it full res, but if you want it to drop down to 720 to save on battery life, or if you want to drop down the CPU usage or something, or the frame rate, you can do all of that on a per game basis. So it gives you really granular control.
Oh, it's a per app you have installed.
Yep.
That's really cool.
Pretty damn cool.
Okay, nerds, pay attention. You can get that right now, but we'll wait and see whether Linda comes to fruition. Dom, what else did you see at CES that you thought was actually worth... Well, you wrote a few things up, obviously.
Yeah, I think the big thing that surprised me was the Google Assistant smart displays. The only one I saw in person was Lenovo's one. So they're basically Google's answer to the Amazon Echo Show and Echo Spot, which I think is the new smaller one. So they're basically smart speakers like an Echo or a Google Home, but they've got a touchscreen on them as well. I'd always looked at the Echo Show as a nonsense product. To nonsense people, it didn't make sense to me. Why would you need a screen on a smart speaker? It seemed idiotic. Then I actually played around with the Lenovo one, and it all kind of clicked into place. And that's not saying that this is better than the Amazon one. I haven't used the show, to be clear. But it's what made me realize, oh, this makes sense. And part of that, I think, is Google has the benefit of YouTube integration. Mm-hmm. So they have some cool stuff with that.
Amazon, the Echo Show, which Lewis, I need to ask you about because you reviewed it.
I did.
They recently, as we discussed, I think, actually on this pod, took away YouTube integration from it.
And
what looks like a petty spat, but also Amazon was subverting Google's advert role at the beginning, which is why they took it away, because they weren't getting the ad plays that they promised. But this way, not made by Google, but we're probably going to assume we're going to see some actual Google hardware at some point.
Yeah, eventually I expect so. So right now we've got one from Lenovo, which is the one I've seen, and JBL and LG. They've all shown theirs off at CES. They will do sometime this year, sort of around the £200 price point generally. And Sony are also making one, but they haven't shown any of that.
Because I was looking at the brands that were making them. They all kind of make sense, but the JBL one was the one that stood out for me because of the audio background.
Yeah.
You're going to hope that that's going to actually be better than some of the Echo products. Like, what are the speakers like on the show, Lewis?
I think the show speakers are actually quite impressive. Okay. Surprisingly so, actually, because when I first plugged it in, I was kind of like, oh, you know, they're going to be all right, but they're not going to be anything impressive. But in terms of kind of room-filling audio, like, it's really impressive. You don't really have to turn it out very loud for it to be better, and, you know, it kind of projects very well. but initially, I was kind of the same about the whole display thing. Like, why do you need a display on a smart speaker? But after using the show for a while, I kind of understand it a little bit more. But I agree with Dom that it's nothing without YouTube.
So, yeah, the YouTube stuff you can do on the Google ones is stuff like not just ask to watch a YouTube video, but also if you're, say, following a recipe and it's giving you directions and it gets to one step, the sort of the demo they showed me was, you know, you get to a step where it's about how to prepare rosemary and you say, oh, Google, show me a video on how to prepare the rosemary in this recipe, and it will go to YouTube and find a relevant video of someone showing you how you strip rosemary leaves from the stem and how you chop them up. And then it goes back to the recipe.
That does sound cool, but obviously, as you probably noted, these kind of demos are always something that they know is going to work.
And in
practice, really, like I have an Echo that I use sporadically, just the Echo Dot.
Yeah.
But sometimes I say things to it that I think it's just going to do easily, and it doesn't know.
Yeah. So the big question, as you say, is always, will it pull this off well in real-world usage? If it can, if it can be good about contextually finding YouTube videos, that could be really powerful for a lot of people. If it just finds you the wrong thing every time, then it's junk.
Yeah. Briefly touching on laptops. I know CES is a big one for laptops every year. Not usually anything that exciting, save for this laptop maybe. I wrote up the Dell XPS 13, which again is popular Windows laptop, but it's kind of iterative. It's kind of becoming user-unfriendly by becoming more expensive, taking away USB-A, which is to be expected from the industry. But did you see anything there this year that is a sign that 2018 is going to be any different for laptops? Or is it just going to be more of the same Ultrabook kind of thing?
There are a few interesting things. So one small thing, I guess, on the XPS 13 point is there's the Asus ZenBook 13, which is that same kind of premium Ultrabook experience, slim build. It's actually a very similar build and size to the XPS 13, but they focused on making it light rather than thin and have made a point of keeping in the USB-A ports. So they've made it just thick enough to keep in USB-A ports, but focused on weight rather than thinness, which is an interesting move.
Does that mean that you get better battery life? Do they claim that?
They are claiming, actually a bit worse than the XPS, but XPS battery life is very solid. They're claiming 15, 16 hours, I think. Does Dell claim like 17?
Yeah, I think the XPS 13, they were claiming like 19 or something ridiculous. Yeah. But I mean, that's not going to happen in real world use.
No. what's more interesting for battery life, so I mean, the really interesting laptop stuff this year is actually chips rather than the specific laptops using them. So on the battery note, we saw they'd first been unveiled late last year, but we got a better look at the first few laptops with Qualcomm Snapdragon chips running Windows 10.
Yeah.
So these are basically smartphone processors, but now stick them in these. Some of them are laptops, some of them are sort of hybrids, you know, tablets with keyboard included. And they are boasting sort of minimum 20 hours battery life. They claim, they say they can do 20 hours continuous video playback, a month on standby, probably, you know, reps are sort of cautiously saying you could get at least a few days of average use.
These are interesting for quite a few reasons. One is the ability that potentially you're going to have something that will be sold to you as a laptop that can have a SIM card.
Yep.
But then interesting also that Qualcomm's gone with the laptop route rather than trying to build these Snapdragon processors into tablets.
Yeah.
Do you get any feeling as to why that they've done that, just to make them more useful or to differentiate, or is it an admission that really, like, people will just have a phone and a mobile computer rather than a tablet in between?
Yeah, I think it's a recognition that the tablet space in the market is just shrinking and shrinking. I think more and more when you get a tablet, what people really want is a 2-in-1. So of the three Snapdragon devices, one of them is a pure laptop, which is the Asus Nova Go, but then the HP and Lenovo devices are both 2-in-1s. So they're tablets with detachable keyboards, but the keyboard and a stylus are included in the price point rather than being optional extras you have to pay for.
That's always a good thing.
So, you know, you are getting out of the box a full laptop experience, and they've both got very nice keyboards. They feel, you know, they're not little sort of flimsy foldy up covers. They're solid things that feel like part of the design, but you can separate them and use it as a tablet if you want to.
Okay.
So I think they are trying to have that best of both worlds thing. They know it is a mobile chip, and they know, I said, part of the benefit is you get 4G access through the SIM card. So a lot of people want that in a tablet form factor, but then they give you a very solid keyboard experience as well.
Yeah, it's always been something that I thought companies have struggled to communicate to market. Like, obviously a smartphone, obviously it's going to be 4G.
Yep.
Whereas even the iPad Pro now, which has an eSIM in it, where you can actually very cleverly buy certain data plans depending on where you are.
Yes.
Not been communicated very well. And also just maybe the market need isn't there. And I think places struggle to sell 4G tablets. So I'm not sure how widespread these kind of things are going to be. I mean, I think the Qualcomm stuff is still relatively niche in this market. I don't think my mum knows about it.
No, right, but, exactly.
It'll be interesting, to see where they go. And before we wrap up CES, Dom, what did you think of Las Vegas? It's the first time you've been.
It is the weirdest place I've ever been.
Yeah.
It's I mean, unreal is the only word I think. At all. You do just walk around feeling like this is pretend. This is a pretend city.
Yeah.
None of it's real. It is. Everyone said to me going there, it feels like a theme park, and I just sort of like, oh yeah, because it's like gambling, like a theme park. No, it really feels like a theme park.
Yeah.
You know, you've got hotels that are just built to look like a New York skyline or like a medieval castle or the whatever. It's just, yeah, it's very, very odd.
Fond memories, Lewis?
Very fond memories. Yeah, I loved my trip to Vegas. I mean, I was blissfully unaware of how much walking I do.
Yeah.
Before CES.
Everything looks very close because everything is so big, and you get thrown off by the horizon. You're like, oh, that's not very far because that's miles away. But actually, that building that's just there is about a 40-minute walk.
Yeah.
And it's always so... That's the main thing I remember about Vegas is it being so busy that you couldn't get cabs, you couldn't get anything like that. You had to just walk because if you were sat in traffic, you'd be sat there for hours.
You might as well just walk, yeah.
Well, we had the double whammy this year because they pushed CES back a week, which meant the end of it clashed with Martin Luther King Day weekend.
So lots of tourists
everyone
being like, who
descended on Vegas because it's a three-day weekend for a lot of people in the States.
Oh, it's going to be a busy
one. So CES ends and then immediately it was rammed with tourists just visiting the city.
Okay, and then just to one last thing on this before we move into a games-heavy section. To splice the two together, you've used it, Dom. You love it, Lewis. HTC Vive Pro, is it a big deal?
I think maybe it's that's such a boring answer, but maybe
it's an untethered version of the Vive.
No. So this is the interesting thing. They're really pushing the wireless thing. The wireless adapter is actually sold separately. Yeah. They're marketing that as if it's part of the Vive Pro. When you buy a Vive Pro, you do not get the wireless adapter. That's a separate thing that also works with the Vive. They've really got two products that they launched this year.
So if you buy Vive Pro,
a wireless adapter and the Vive Pro, and they're different.
So the Vive Pro is tethered if you buy it.
The Vive Pro by default is tethered.
So how is that different to the original?
The Vive Pro has a high resolution screen, 78% increase. It's not quite 4K, but it's getting closer to it. And it's got integrated headphones, which is the same as the deluxe audio strap you could buy for the original Vive, but that was an extra £100.
Strong knowledge.
Before, whereas now it's built in. The big thing actually for me from using it is it's way more comfortable. They've completely changed the ergonomics. It feels a lot lighter. It's not, they didn't release specs, but I think it's about the same weight. But when it's on your head, it feels lighter. It's more comfortable. There's less pressure.
So they've adjusted the center of gravity, so it's not as front heavy as the first generation device was.
Yeah.
So you could use it for longer and not feel that kind of like, oh, a headset weighing my face down feeling that you used to get. I think really the wireless adapter is the more interesting thing, and they've just sort of been a bit misleading in the way they've marketed it as part of the Vive Pro.
I thought that was the case.
It's really not. Yeah, I thought I was writing everything up, and then I realized, wait, these actually aren't the same product. They're totally separate.
Do either of them have a retail price?
No retail price and no release date.
I think this is my issue with the Vive Pro, is that the Vive, you know, someone at Vive has said that the Vive Pro is going to be the premium option. When I thought the Vive was the premium
Vive was
option.
Already the premium VR choice.
It is the most expensive one in the market already.
So how much is it at the moment?
It's £600.
Which is after a price drop.
Yeah.
So this one could push £1,000.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with the wireless adapter, I'm sure they'll do a bundled version where you get the wireless adapter thrown in, and that would be.
Do you
grand.
Think? Sorry, what were you going
to
say?
I was about to say the first generation Vive when it was released, it was almost £800.
And do you think that the combination of Pro and wireless adapter is also going to mean that people are going to have to update their rigs as well?
Yeah, the upgrade in resolution means you're going to have to properly update your rig, even if you've got VR at the moment.
Fun times.
Woo!
Right, so obviously I'm going to do that dumb thing. Dom Preston, CE yes or CE no?
CE yes.
Yep. Yeah. We had a lot to talk about there. I think it was quite a Dom Preston-esque show.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff I enjoyed. I mean, it's a very weird experience, and I actually didn't even get onto the fact that the whole show experienced a massive power cut on the first day.
Oh, yeah.
And all the lights went down.
And they just bowled on and just kept doing it.
It was because it rained. Yeah. It was the like Vegas equivalent of when everything stops in the UK because there's like a centimetre of snow. They had a little bit of rainfall and everything broke.
So funny. Lewis, CE yes, CE no?
I'll say CE yes.
Okay, cool. We're positive this year. Things might actually get made from CES. We'll be right back to talk about some paper. Not content with reinventing the console market every few years, Nintendo has now cropped up this week and announced some overpriced cardboard cutouts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Now, before Lewis and Dom lynch me, may I let it be known that I actually quite love Nintendo. I own a Switch and a 3DS, actually, and I have had probably, I was thinking this morning, more Nintendo products than probably any other company ever, not just in gaming. But despite this, what the hell is Nintendo Labo, Lewis?
Labo. So basically, Nintendo is bringing out a bunch of accessories, cardboard accessories that you build yourself. And this is part of the overall novelty, is that you get these flat-packed accessories, you pop them out, you follow a step-by-step guide on your Switch, and then you have these accessories that interact with the Switch itself in a bunch of mini-games that come with the cardboard.
Okay, so you spend roughly... do we know if there's more than one pack of these things?
There's two packs at the moment. One's a variety pack with a bunch of different things in it, and then there's one that's specifically about robots.
And they're both £60 RRP, I
think. No, £160 and £170.
Okay, so the price is you're getting some, you would assume, quite hardy cardboard.
Yeah,
and some software as well to put onto your Switch.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, and the adverts we've seen, sort of a Switch turning into like a little mini keyboard organ kind of thing.
Yeah, the keyboard's a really cool thing because it's just, you know, how it works. Because when you think about it, it's just cardboard, but somehow, you know, Nintendo's managed to use the little Joy-Con, slot one in, and then use the IR sensor that's built into the right Joy-Con to watch the keys and then work out what's being pressed and then translate that into noise on the Switch.
Yeah, Dom, you were saying yesterday you get little
So there's IR, tiny little IR stickers, infrared stickers in the pack as well. And yeah, the way the piano works is there's a sticker on the back of each key, so when you press down on a key, it lifts up the back and thus moves the IR sticker into view of the sensor on the Joy-Con.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts, which is on the bottom of the right controller, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty nuts. And this has kind of come out of the left field. No one was really expecting this.
There was the word the morning of the announcement that Nintendo were going to announce something. And there'd been speculation for a day or so that, you know, sort of rumors had broke they were going to announce something. No one knew what it was. Then Nintendo said, yeah, 10 p.m. tonight, we're announcing a new interactive experience, I think they called it. And no one really knew what it was. There was actually a lot of people trying to saying like, lower your expectations. It's something just for kids. People thought maybe it's just going to be some more amiibo stuff or something. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, this totally left field thing. They'd shown a handful of press, but I think three publications in the UK, a similar number in the US. So really no one knew about this.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but I'm reticent to mock Nintendo because I do like them. But for every misstep they have, like the... I know you guys like it, sorry, but the Wii U was perhaps not the best idea.
They've made good
with the Switch. But as you said, do you think it is just for kids? Like, I know Wii like this sort of thing, like the piano thing looks cool, but there was also one where you can basically build like an
exoskeleton?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Very cool.
Cardboard robot suit. But, you know, the bloke who bought the Switch to play on his commute into work might not be so up for dressing up as a robot. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's definitely pushed at kids, and they're trying to go into that educational game space that you see a lot of, like the Sphero and things like that, doing all those coding toys. This is a kind of engineering equivalent. So apparently a lot of the software side of it, as it's teaching you to build these things, it's also teaching you why they work. It's teaching you about the fact that it's IR sensors on the piano keys that the Joy-Con is going to read.
Yeah.
So kids are understanding that side of it, the technical side of why it works, and also like the mechanical side, like why we're attaching this bit of string to this and it's going to pull on this and that will pull that thing down. So it's that kind of idea that kids both having fun and also learning engineering principles and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's to be applauded, because we've talked about it before again in this podcast, how we're all tech journalists, but probably compared to last generation and probably the one that's coming up, actually, we don't really quite know how all the stuff we use works.
It's getting beyond this.
And I can't code. Yeah. So anything that Nintendo pushes to sort of educate kids about what they're actually using and sort of seeing it as quite a diverse tool is quite good, because you look at like Sony and Microsoft, yes, they have, particularly Microsoft has toes in the education space, but in terms of their actual mainstream consoles, aside from VR, there's not a lot else apart from buy this console, here are some amazing games.
Yeah.
But these auxiliary things that Nintendo do are quite surprising in a nice way.
And I think it also comes from Nintendo's background. You know, they made a lot of stuff before games, and they made playing cards, and they made little toys and things like that. And it comes from, they've always treated, for better or and sometimes for worse, they've always treated video games as toys.
Yeah.
Which they're quite reluctant towards the sort of trend of treating video games as an art form and sort of, you know, like films or whatever. They're more like, no, these are toys. So this is them going back in more in that direction and more kind of saying, look, yeah, let's make cool toys for kids.
Do you think it might be important for the Switch that it does that? Because even though we love it, and you've got something like Mario, which it presents itself, the Odyssey game that is, as quite a playful, toyish kind of thing. But then you have, opposite to what you were saying, the Zelda game, Breath of the Wild, is very cinematic.
Yeah.
It's very much presented as a quite an adult experience in a way, despite Zelda often appearing quite cartoonish.
Yeah.
Is this them sort of saying, okay, maybe we haven't had as many games out that have rocked the world as we'd like. Here's something else we're doing, and this is a platform beyond the games themselves.
Yeah, I think that's partly it. I think it's them finding something that for them should be a pretty solid revenue stream, like Amiibo was, something that sits outside of games.
And they're encouraging people to kind of get involved and get creative with it and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think it was you that was saying that there was a bunch of Toy-Cons that were in the trailer that aren't actually available now. So there's going to be a lot more of these.
So they're even calling them Toy-Cons.
Toy-Cons are the name, which is ingenious. I love it.
Yeah.
I think they're very open that this is for kids. If you're sort of a guy in your 20s or 30s listening and thinking, this sounds rubbish, it's not for me. It's like, it's not for you.
Yeah.
It's for kids. And that's fine. They're making it for kids. There's nothing wrong with that.
And big kids as well.
Yeah, they said it's kids and kids at heart, which I think is the space.
That's basically Nintendo's entire business model.
Yeah. And I think it makes sense. It's interesting. I was listening to some people, you know, I'm not a parent, but I was listening to some parents talking about why they might be taking this kind of strategy. And they were saying that from their kids' perspective, the Switch isn't always that interesting because the kids already have iPads.
Yeah.
Okay. And from a kid's perspective, well, they can play games on an iPad. The Switch doesn't seem that different. The novel features that blow our minds about the Switch, for a lot of kids, aren't that thrilling. But this is something the Switch can do that the iPad fucking can't. Right?
Like, yep.
This is something the Switch can do that nothing else can. And it's a real sort of proposition of, get this for your kids. It's not an iPad. It's not a tablet.
I think that's like a real shame, because I think when I was growing up, my parents were always slightly hesitant about letting me play games and buy games or whatever, because they were like, oh, is it going to fry his brain? It's not books. But actually, I think quite a lot of the games I played did actually shape how I viewed culture without being too wanky about it. And they were very entertaining. And I think I got the balance right, and I think they did. And it's odd to me now that kids growing up, actually their parents being like, look, you should play this, you should have this. But the tablet is just this weird thing where kids love tablets and everyone else is like, nah, I'm not too bothered. But because it's like the on-demand thing, so you don't have to sit up till 8 o'clock to watch a program, you can just binge the entire thing. And that instant gratification thing, and despite what David, our colleague, might say, mobile games are not as good as console games. In the way that they actually make your brain work.
Yeah.
Right? And just to finish on that note, Switch, you've played more games on it than I have, probably, both of you. What can we expect from it apart from Toy-Con stuff over the next few months?
This year it doesn't look set to have anything quite as big as Zelda or Mario from Nintendo itself.
Even that statement to me is a big deal. An entire year where a console won't have a flagship Nintendo game.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, that is always the case for a Nintendo. A Mario comes every few years, a Zelda comes every 5 or 6 years. This is not unusual for Nintendo.
So they really need to bang the third-party drum now.
Yeah, so the big first-party games, I think, are probably Kirby and Yoshi, which, again, are skewing a little bit younger. I think after an opening year where they skewed towards our age group, they're now going to hit the younger demographic to try and lure parents in, basically.
But they've also got the rumour of Pokemon games yeah. being developed for the Switch.
There's constant yes. speculation about Pokemon Switch, so we don't know. Maybe. Maybe
it would
year.
Make sense. Yeah. They have to, right?
There'll be one eventually, surely. Yeah.
Please.
and Metroid won't be this year, right?
Metroid won't be this year. Yeah. That'll be next year. But I wouldn't be surprised, like, the way they've done this. Like, Labo, this announcement, they announced it just now. It's coming out in 3 months.
Okay.
Nintendo are very capable of having surprise game reveals like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if there's something big coming out this year from them we haven't heard a word about yet. Also, an Animal Crossing game is pretty probable with yep. the mobile game having just come out.
Good point.
They used Mario Run to hype up Odyssey. I wouldn't be shocked if Animal Crossing Pocket Camp is to hype up Animal Crossing Switch. Mm. And yeah, also, as you said, third party Switch sales have been massive. So now everyone wants to port their game to the Switch because it's not the Wii U. It's selling so much better than the Wii U. You put a game on the Switch, you will sell copies. Mm. So everyone is going to do that now.
And when are the big games shows this year?
E3's in June.
June.
That's the biggest one.
Yeah.
And then you've got Gamescom in August. And then you've got Paris Games Week kind of the end of the year. And you've got a few other kind of...
So Tokyo at some point.
Oh, yeah, Tokyo. Yeah, kind of early September usually.
So all like game that. Stuff yeah. is like, yeah, the second half of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing big for a while. Traditionally, game releases are all jam-packed into the back half of the year. Spring yeah. and summer is usually pretty quiet. So
okay, well, thank you. We will talk then after the break about a game that is out in the first half of this year.
It is, actually.
Excellent,
yeah.
Brilliant, cool. I'm glad I guessed that correct. And quickly, Lewis Painter, Lab Oh Yes or Lab Oh No?
Lab Oh Yes, I think. Give it a go.
Yeah, Lab Oh Yes.
Yeah, so it's resounding thing. Cardboard is cool from the pod. We'll be right back to talk about a very highly anticipated game. Ever since 2004, Far Cry has grown to be regarded as one of the most inventive first-person shooter franchises. They're generally set in wilderness environments. Am I right there?
You are right there.
Excellent, cool. I read that well on the internet. But with no discernible narrative trail. Lewis and Dom, Lewis in particular, you have played Far Cry 5 before most people in the world.
Yes.
Does it reset the Far Cry scene all over again?
I mean, it's kind of what we've seen from previous Far Cry games, but they've added a few elements to it. And I think the big thing is that this time it's set in America. You know, usually these are kind of set in kind of quite tropical, quite glamorous, or not glamorous places, but, you know, far-fetched places. Yeah. And this time, for the Americans, it's at home, and it deals with religion and cults and stuff like that. So okay. it's very hard hit, and it's very relevant, I'd say, to what's kind of going on at the moment.
So what's the? Well, I'm not sure if anything you have seen is embargoed, obviously.
No, I'm good.
Are you good? Okay, cool. tell us, where is it set? What's the idea behind
it? So it's set in the fictional Hope County in Montana. Mm-hmm. And basically, there's a preacher named Joseph Seed, and he believes that he has to save the county from inevitable collapse, whatever that means. So he establishes Eden's Gate, which sounds great, sounds lovely, you know, save everyone, brilliant. In reality, he's actually a radical preacher, and Eden's Gate is actually a militaristic doomsday cult. Okay. And they go around terrorizing. Yeah, sounds great. And yeah, they're basically going around terrorizing the county, and it's up to you to kind of fight back. You build up that resistance and take them down. So,
did you manage that in the short amount of time?
Surprisingly, not.
Hey, it's a long game, really.
Didn't quite wrap it up in that.
No, yeah, you know, didn't quite nail it down there. But it's just, you know, the thing I like about Far Cry is that it's an open world game, so you can go and wander and do what the hell you want. But especially in Far Cry 5, I've noticed that random events just seem to happen, and they seem to just explode so quickly. You can't really know what's going on. Like, I was playing at one point, I was just driving down a road, quite quiet on my way to a mission. I see a tractor in a field. I was like, okay, this is, you know, nice little setting, blah, blah, blah. And then a tractor starts coming towards me, and I was like, okay,
yeah.
A bit weird. And then, yeah, the guy in the tractor started shooting at me because he was part of the cult. I started, you know, obviously return fire, and then I clipped his tank. The tractor blew up. That attracted other people to come in towards me and start fighting me.
Yeah, yeah.
I got some backup from my resistance team because you can have like guns for hire, up to two or three people that will give you backup in times like this, which is very, very handy in that game. And then, yeah, it just keeps on going from there. Like, you know, there was people coming, I was killing them, and then helicopters came with rockets and missiles, and it's just like, what's so going
there
on?
There are elements of Grand Theft Auto in there.
Oh, yeah.
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 Of attracting attention and sort of stuff, cacophony happening around you.
It's that same sort of sandbox feeling, and yeah, where you start something off, there might be a chain reaction of other people noticing, and things can just escalate.
Which is good,
so
right?
Quickly.
Because we've seen a lot of, more accurately, you both have seen open world games on platforms, Big Dup, No Man's Sky, comes to mind, where they say it's open world, but really what you're doing, even though you're kind of choosing, is relatively on rails. But this is more, you think, a sort of a huge world in a game.
I mean, I got to explore one little area of the huge open world, so I don't know what it's got in store in general. But, you know, with games like Far Cry, you can kind of wander through and you'll kind of stumble upon people and things and places that aren't, you know, very important to the main story, but they'll kind of give you a little bit of background knowledge. They'll give you a little something to do. And I think as long as it has more of that, we should be okay. I just don't want a repeat of kind of older open world games where, the actual land is huge, but then there's nothing to do in it because what's the point?
It is just running around in a quite nicely rendered
exactly, environment. What's the point in running around a nicely rendered forest with nothing to do?
I ask myself that all the time. What console were you playing it on?
PS4.
PS4, and will it also
PS4
be...
PS4 Pro, technically.
Okay. And will it make a difference to gamers whether they have the Pro or not?
Yeah, the Pro gives you close to 4K. I don't know if it's actually 4K. It's probably, dynamic 4K.
Okay.
It's kind of upscaled. And it'll probably be the same for the Xbox One X as well. Xbox One X, I imagine, probably would be able to hit the 4K mark, like a proper 4K. There'll definitely be a benefit over the pro users against the standard users.
The standard users can still run the standard game.
Yeah, 100%.
This is the kind of demanding game that I think people will see a proper uptake in performance.
I still find this fascinating. Even though we see it in other markets, like, for instance, the smartphone market, you can download Super Mario Run on your £100 Wiley Fox phone, whatever, can download it on the Razer phone, maybe. Where is the gaming market going? In the same way that you can buy this game, but it will run better on other platforms, will they phase out the older consoles at some point, or do you think we're just going to have to sit with two for a while?
I think, the big thing was that when Microsoft and Sony announced these high-end consoles, they were like, we're not getting rid of the standard ones, because people were worried that, people would, you'd start getting the 4K stuff.
And you'd be like, £200 for a console.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's telling, having come out of Black Friday a couple months ago, a lot of the biggest stuff around on Black Friday was console deals, where you're getting a console and a few games for £200.
Yeah.
Like, they just can't offer that kind of value and that kind of entry into the market with the high-end stuff.
No.
They're identifying two different sort of markets, really. It's people who want a games console to play a few games, or who aren't that fussed on technical performance, will buy the £200 one, and then they've got them in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And that's what they want. Cool. But they also know there's the super demanding, hardcore gamers who are willing to spend £400-£500 on their console. And what they're trying to do is get them to buy that rather than buy a high-end gaming PC. They're trying to lure them away from the PC market and back into high-end consoles.
And do you think that is a good thing? And is it going to work? Do you think gamers are actually going to be better off buying consoles where they don't have to fiddle around with the settings? Because before, I would assume to most of the market, high-end PC gaming is a little bit too exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of a console is it's just easy. You don't have to switch out things every year or so. You don't have to do any of that kind of stuff. And I think that's where the appeal is. And if you've been a PS4 gamer since the PS4 came out, you don't really want to jump ship to PC because all your games are on PlayStation. You don't want to have to rebuy all the games again. So Sony offering something like the PS4 Pro, giving you a higher end experience, you're like, okay, well, that's my middle ground there. You know, I still got my games. I've got that, faux 4K playback. And what more could you want,
Nice. When is Far Cry 5 out?
End of March, 28th or 27th. One
of the two. And you that's all right. I won't hold you to it. And you have something up on Tech Advisor right now about
it. Yeah, we've got a preview up on Tech Advisor. We're going to get some gameplay videos up in the next few days as well. It's going to be exciting.
Cool. Check out TA Gaming for that as well. And let me just wrap it up without putting you too much on the spot. I've already asked you about the Switch. So in the Microsoft and Sony world, what other games are you guys looking forward to soon?
Red Dead Redemption 2.
But everyone's been looking forward to that for years, right? Is it actually the year?
I think, because they pushed it back from fall 2017 to spring 2018. I'm kind of dubious that it'll get pushed back to the end of 2018, but I feel confident that it will come out at some point this year.
What is taking so long?
It's Rockstar. Like, they take ages doing anything. But, with companies like Rockstar, you don't really mind giving them that time and that leeway because you see what they've done with Grand Theft Auto 5 and Grand Theft Auto Online. It's the game came out in 2013 and it's had its most popular month in December 2017.
What, GTA 5?
Yeah, really? GTA Online.
Oh, right.
The online, so, 5 years after release, it's still, insanely popular. They're releasing free DLC updates all the time for it. So, if you get that kind of quality and that kind of bang for your buck with Red Dead Redemption 2, I'm all over it.
How long was it since the last one?
good few years.
Yes, a long time.
Yeah, quite a long time.
PS3 days.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And then, Dom, is there anything that springs to mind for you?
I think Last of Us Part 2 is probably the biggest one upcoming for me, and that's probably a while off. I think realistically that's going to be next year rather than this year.
Even the original is still a bit of an underground hit, isn't it?
Did it break into huge mainstream? Critical success, but I don't know how well that translated into sales. I think it did well, but not a massive blockbuster. And I think it did quite well. It got a remaster on the PS4, which is how I actually played it.
Okay.
Which I think helped it find more people as well. But I love the original. I think it's really, really fantastic. And I can't wait to see what they can do.
Nice. Thank you both very much. So, Far Cry 5, Lewis, high five or dry five?
Definitely high five.
It's a very positive pod, isn't it, Dom? I take it you're going to say...
I'm a bit less sure.
Why is it dry five?
My worry is, I think it's going to actually suffer from the comparison to Assassin's Creed Origins, which is the other big recent Ubisoft game. That did well, in part because they took a big break from the series and changed things, revamped things, looked at the series and really figured out what worked and what didn't, broke it down, built it up again, and everyone loved it. Far Cry 5 looks like Far Cry 4, which looked like Far Cry 3.
Okay.
It looks like more of the same to me in a different setting.
It worked,
which will be fun. It'll be a fun game, I'm sure, but I worry it's a bit samey.
Maybe it's coming from the critical point of view where that's what the critics say. But then again, I'm thinking back to, is it Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, where they tried to mix it up, stuck it in space, and everyone was like, nah.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah.
Put it back. So you never know who that
backfires.
And then the audience kind of maybe does want more of the same, but I totally take your point.
Yep.
You'll have to play it in March 27th or 28th, everyone, and let us know. This has been UK Tech Weekly. We actually have had two this week, because I edited the last one too late. But thanks for listening, and see you soon. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.